Hello, my name is Zach Wenzel, and this is my wife,
Danielle Wenzel, and this is my sister,
Stephanie Bourne, and this is my husband,
Stephen Bourne, and this is my brother-in-law, Zach Wenzel.
And welcome to Inlaudable, the podcast from four in-laws discussing everything from pop culture and literature to movies, music, and anything in between.
Hello, everyone. And welcome back to Inlaudable, Episode 2. Today we're talking about board games, as we mentioned last time, but just before we get into it, I still have a couple little things we want to just talk about. First of all, following up, last time we talked about 2020 movies, and we failed to mention Sonic the Hedgehog, which is a pretty big deal. I haven't seen it yet, but I know Zach and Danielle, y'all did see it. Just real brief, surface level, let me know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, we saw it the other night. Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
I really enjoyed it, too. I didn't go in with an open mind like Danielle did, just based off of the track record of video games, animated people in, like, real-life settings type movies. Don't have the best track records, but I ended up really enjoying it. I thought Ben Schwartz, did a really good job with the voice. And Jim Carrey was Jim Carrey throughout, so that's always enjoyable.
I think Jim Carrey was really good, and I love Ben Schwartz. From a long time ago, because I kind of, and Stephanie does too, knows Ben Schwartz because he was in a lot of different like YouTube videos and stuff College Humor videos and stuff. And then when he was in Parks and Rec as John Ralphio, so I like follow him already, so I was really excited about that. But I also had a nostalgia thing with it, I feel like, because the Sega Genesis was like the first like video game that we had. We had Sonic on there, and then we had a GameCube. We had Sonic on there, and so that was, like, a game that we always played. So I feel like there was a little bit of nostalgia there, so I think that...
Because we didn't play a lot of video games growing up. There were, like, a handful that we just played a lot.
Right.
That was one of them.
I feel like Sonic's one of those games that gets re-released, like, every year on some new platform. It's on the Amazon Fire Stick now, and it's on the phone, it's on everything. Mm-hmm. But that movie, going back to what you're saying, Zach, you know... A lot of video game movies have bad track records. Mortal Kombat, terrible movie. I loved it because it was so terrible.
Fun, but yeah.
Same with Street Fighter. I never watched Assassin's Creed, but I heard that.
No, I feel like the first one or two Resident Evil movies are overlooked sometimes. They're very fantastic movies. They does go off the rails a little bit, as they made like 4, 5, and 6, however many movies they made. But but Sonic was really enjoyable. It was nice.
Now, switching gears, there's something really important to you you want to talk about.
So we just recently, we're a little bit late to the party, but we just recently tried the chicken sandwich from Popeyes, and let me just say, it lives up to the hype. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic chicken sandwich. I don't know if Danielle has the same opinion as I do, but I thought it was fantastic chicken sandwich.
I thought it was really good. I could do with extra pickles on it next time. And I do just want to point out that you did not get the mayo on it.
It's like a spicy mayo.
And I think that really, like, made the sandwich. But
what a lot of people are saying is that what puts it over the edge on Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwich is that it has 4 pickles on it as opposed to 2 pickles. But Danielle apparently wants more pickles.
I want more pickles, definitely.
More than 4.
So would you say it is better than Chick-fil-A?
I would say
it's way better. It's the best chicken sandwich
on the
market.
It's seasoned really good, the chicken.
It's the best. I hear Shake Shack's really good, and I've been to a Shake Shack before, but I've not tried their chicken sandwich.
Speaking of chicken, Steph and I tried a new chicken place, actually. There's a place down in Ashland, Kentucky, called Slim Chickens. And, like, we're living in Huntington for the past 9 months. We're going to be there for another 3 months. So we're trying to hit all the restaurants. And Slim Chickens is one of them. And I liked it a lot. I thought the chicken was really good. The french fries were subpar compared to Chick-fil-A, but the chicken itself was seasoned very well. What was your general thought on Slim Chickens?
It was okay. It wasn't my favorite. it wasn't bad chicken, but it wasn't the best.
It was like a fried chicken sandwich.
And it's good for like a fast, because it's a kind of like a fast food.
What do they call it where it's between fast food and...
Fast casual.
Yeah,
it's very fast casual.
They had good lemonade.
They did have a really good lemonade.
Most chicken places do. And like sweet teas. Yeah. Guy Fieri has a chicken restaurant somewhere throughout the country in like malls and stuff. And he like... marinates his chicken in pickle juice and then fries it. I think that'd give Danielle the pickle flavor she's looking for.
That's everything
you need.
Yeah.
That I'm looking for.
Mwah. good. Well, we like following up on what we're doing. But let's get to our main topic today. We're going to talk about a few different board games we like to play. And then we're going to take a little break and play a game for you all. A Mad Lib, one of our favorites. And then we'll talk about some games that we want to try that we haven't tried before. Now, why did we start playing board games all of a sudden? I mean, we always played, Life or, Apples Monopoly. To Apples, the staples. But then, it seems like in the past year or two, we got crazy into games and we're getting a bunch of them. It started off with Ticket to Ride. We got a lot of Ticket to Ride going on, and then it just evolved, and now I feel like every time we get together is a new game.
I never played board games before joining this family. We played the occasional Monopoly every once in a while with my family, but that's about it, really. Except for New Year's Eve, there was always a party at my aunt's house, and the adults would always play a board game, like a risque board game.
And let's be honest, Monopoly is like one of the worst board games out there now.
But I feel like it has a lot of versions now that make it more fun. Like we have a Star Wars version. It adds some rules and tweaks it. And same with a Super Mario version we have. So I think the different versions help kind of update it and make it more fun. But yeah, it's always fun playing board games.
Yeah.
We growing up, we played, like you call them, the staples.
Yeah, same here.
Monopoly, Life, Apples, but I don't know, probably Ticket to Ride, that was the first game. And we also, someone told us about Dominion.
Oh, yeah.
The game Dominion, and we liked that one a lot. And we were talking about games with someone else, and what did he call Dominion? Or, we told him to play Dominion, and he's like, that was, an entry-level,
Yeah, it's just like an entry-level game. And when we first played it, that's really complicated. This is a lot harder than, Uno. But then now it's apparently an entry-level,
And, I didn't realize there's, a whole new, whole other, all the gaming stores and everything. There's just so many.
What about Mousetrap, though? Remember Mousetrap?
Yeah.
We never had that. We never really played that. And I remember going to a friend's house once, and I was disappointed because I just wanted to set up the thing, and she was like, no, you have to do it as you go.
Can you set it up and put the little thing
I just want to put the whole thing together and do it.
I had a very similar game when I was a little kid. It wasn't made by Play-Doh, but it was basically Play-Doh, and you set up all these traps. You meet this little Play-Doh guy, and his traps would cut him in half or decapitate him and stuff. I thought it was the coolest little thing ever. I forgot what it was called, but it was really fun. But I think getting into board games recently, I don't think it's unique to us. I feel like, in general, board games are on the rise right now. When I used to go to the store, Target, or Walmart, they had, the staples, But in the past, seems like in the past couple of years, there's more and more. There's a whole aisle of board games now at these places. Mm-hmm. There always was at Toys R Us or specialty stores, but I feel like, in general, board games are just growing. And why do you think this is, not necessarily a new trend, but, and maybe it's just my own perception, I don't know, but why do you think it seems like they're
I actually had to write a small paper in my marketing class. We did it on board games.
Oh,
and
cool.
I was able to my main point of that paper was just that right now people might be kind of lacking that human interaction or family interaction, or it's okay, we need to go out and do something. What are we going to do? And people are always on their phones and things like that. So now board games are kind of coming back because we've kind of stepped away from that. There's a lot of online gaming and video games and stuff like that, that it almost seems like a new thing for some kids is actually sitting around playing board games.
Everything old is new again thing that we experience a lot. There's a reasons why, my niece is 12 years old. She's really into scrunchies, which is something that people were really into in the 80s and 90s. And it's that retro feel of board games have a retro quality to them. You think of years ago before there were video games and everything. That's what people played. That's what families played. And I think their popularity has a lot to do with that sort of retro thing to hipstery, if you will, thing. Everything old is new again. I think that has a lot to do with it as well. But
definitely. And I grew up playing lots of video games. It's something I was very into growing up. And I always liked playing chess with my friends or with my brother. But, I thought what you were saying, people would get into the video games or their phones or whatever else, and we've sort of separated themselves from social interaction, and now board games is a way to bring that back, and I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll probably talk about this in more detail, but when we play board games together, I like putting away the phones. It's just me. It doesn't always work that way.
They should have a You know, the game takes 30 minutes to play, you know, hour and a half with phones.
Yes.
Depending on the game, that's why I like playing with teams or no teams. You can kind of, like, if it's a really long game and you can kind of pass it off to someone else, or you kind of have that person to talk to, which is why I like playing with teams.
And I think it's fine if people are on, Steve and I have different opinions on
this.
Yes,
we do.
But when you're spending time with your family and you don't have to be like, okay, everyone focus and like just on this game, we need to get through the game. I think it's fine to like, because usually when we are on our phones, it's like, oh, I had this video that was really funny that I wanted to show you, or we're talking about.
And then I'm like, oh, it's your turn. Like, whose turn is it? And that's what happens.
But it's part of coming together right. and talking and just spending time with each other.
And I think that's kind of how we use it, is like, we're all together and we're playing a game, but we also haven't seen each other in, you know, however many weeks.
Yeah.
Because we're all, you know, I mean, you guys are in another state, and so when you guys are up here, we're kind of catching up as we play.
And so I think it's fine. But then Steve, it gets a little annoying.
It does vary depending on the game for me. Some games, I think it's important that you're immersed in it. Mm-hmm. Other ones, not as important. But tonight we're having a game night, actually. We're going to play some games tonight after the podcast. And Zach and Danielle went and got some snacks. So when you think of board game night, what is the best board game snack? I want to hear Zach's thoughts on this.
We always have a lot of peanut M&Ms rolling around.
Mm-hmm. Staple.
That's probably my favorite.
Everyone likes peanut M&Ms.
Peanut M&Ms is good. Sometimes we have fully cooked foods, like pizza rolls. That's not a fully cooked food. Pizza, hot
complete
foods.
Meal.
Pizza rolls, pizza, chips. Chips is also another big staple. Mm-hmm.
I think we do tend to go for stuff that you can, like, that's small.
Finger
foods. Really quick. Finger foods.
That's not too messy.
I will say we did get Cheetos for tonight.
Oh,
which
nice.
Might not be.
No, that might not. Because
then you're going to have
Doritos.
Dirty fingers, and you're going
to
I have a solution for that, actually.
Yeah.
I eat Cheetos with chopsticks, and it works perfectly for me.
It looks ridiculous.
Cheetos with chopsticks.
Yeah.
Now we'll have to get chopsticks for game night so we can
be
quicker at.
Then you don't get cheesy fingers.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Popcorn is another good one. I'm a sucker for some popcorn, I'll tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
Our other in law. Shannon, she's not here with us right now, but she makes spinach dip often, and
mm-hmm.
that's another good one for game night.
It's not really my bag,
but
only because there's mayonnaise in it.
She does occasionally make me spinach dip without mayonnaise, which is very nice of her.
Or she'll make buffalo chicken dip sometimes.
Buffalo chicken dip without cream cheese, which I also do not like.
Zach's picky if you didn't get that.
I just know what I like.
So let's talk about some of the games we like a lot. I'll kind of kick us off a little bit. There's one I got probably 2 years ago for Christmas. Stephanie got it for me. It was my birthday. It's called Betrayal at House on the Hill. Now, I like this one because for lots of reasons, but let me tell you a little bit about it first. It was originally created by Bruce Glasgow and originally released in 2004. However, it was re-released in 2010 and published by Avalon Hill, which is a subsidiary of Wizards of the Coast. Quick little side note, Wizards of the Coast, they also are behind Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering, both games that I'm interested in. Betrayal at House on the Hill is also by them. It won a Gamer's Choice Award in 2004. And a little bit about the game, if you haven't played it before. So, it's a co-op game in the beginning. You're all in this haunted house. You start off with a tile, it's just like the entryway to the house. And as the game progresses, you add new tiles to the house, and you explore each room. So every time you play it, the board is different. And that's one of the reasons I like it a lot, because it's a different game every time.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much build the playing board as part of the game, which is really interesting.
And what really cool things happen, certain tiles have triggers. So let's say you're going into the kitchen or something like that, and this trigger goes off, and a drip card comes in, and drip, drip, drip. There's something dripping in the corner, and it leaves you in suspense, or you go into another room, and you hear a scream, or like all these weird, crazy haunted house things happen. And it's really neat, because you feel like you're in this haunted house for real. And then about two-thirds of the way through the game, sometimes earlier, depends, the haunt happens. And one of the people on your team, whoever's playing, becomes a traitor or a monster. And their goal now, they actually have to try and kill or murder the rest of the team. And then, so it turns into the traitor, and then everybody else. And everybody else has a goal they're trying to obtain to beat the game, and the traitor is trying to, like, murder everybody. So it's kind of really fun. Everyone's on the team in the beginning, and then it switches. This game usually goes 60 minutes or so. It plays 3 to 6 people, and it has a complexity rating of 2.38 out of 5.
Okay.
So
it's, really?
Yeah.
I feel like...
You feel like it should be more complex or less complex?
I get
it.
What is the complexity rating? It includes, like, how long it takes to play, how many rules do you have to actually, like, read through, if you need, like, technical skills, like, if you really need, like, math or reading to kind of figure out, like, what moves are going to happen next, and it kind of bases it on that.
Mm-hmm. So it's not 2.38 out of 5, so it's just under halfway complex, according to this scale, so that's pretty good. It is a team game for most of it, which is it's fun. It's the reason I like it. And it keeps me on the edge of my seat. Zach's really good about putting fancy music on when we play a game. We play this at the Wild
theme
West.
Music.
Yeah, game music.
Theme music.
When we play this other game called Bang, he puts Wild West music on. It's a Wild West game. And this one, he puts Haunted House music on. And it really just helps with the immersion into the game. And keeps me on the edge of my seat. Mm. I'm actually kind of getting scared when we're playing it. Sometimes we'll dim the lights just to make it a little more creepy. Mm. Another interesting thing, for Christmas, Zach and Danielle got me the expansion to it. I haven't tried it yet, but it's called Widow's Walk, and it adds more tiles to the game.
Stephanie hates the cover of it.
Oh,
yeah,
it's so creepy.
It's a creepy-looking witch lady. Well, I should go back. The tiles, there's a first floor, a basement, and a second floor. The tiles, you put them down. It depends what floor you go on. The expansion pack adds a roof, so you can go on the roof of the house. Just a couple things I wanted to just point out about it. The guy who did the expansion pack, his name is Mike Salinker, and he was involved in the project in 2004, came back 2010, and he heard people talking about his game, including Pendleton Ward, who's
Adventure Time.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's a fan of the game, and the creator of Cards Against Humanity, Max Temkin. But yeah, that's one of my... I like that game a lot. We've all had fun playing. I think Zach and I like it more than everybody else, but it's still a fun one.
I'm never the bad guy, though. I'm kind of bummed out about that.
Yeah.
I always want to be the bad guy. It always ends up being somebody else. That's okay. Maybe one.
I will say, it was a little bit confusing one of the first times I played it, because I did end up being...
The traitor.
The traitor, the monster, yeah. And so I had to go into the other room and reading it, and then I'm by yourself. So I mean, I guess I could see that being, like, a little bit more complex, but I think that's the part that... would make the complexity rating go higher.
Yeah, for sure. And because you want to clarify the rules with somebody, but as a trader, if you try to clarify the rules, they'll then
you're
know
gonna
how
you're
going to win.
You're going to be giving them information that you shouldn't be giving them.
Yeah, I think it is hard to, when you're playing with people for the first time and explaining it,
mm-hmm.
it's harder, but once you've played once...
Yeah, once you get it and you play
yeah,
it
once.
Yeah, once
you played once, and it's like, okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I, yeah, it's really fun. I like how it's different every time.
Yeah, it's a good one. But kind of taking, you know... It's a haunted house. It's kind of scary. A little bit of murder mystery going on. Leads me to our another game we really like to play. It's a classic. We love it.
Are you talking about my favorite game?
I am talking
Clue
about Clue
is my favorite game to play. It's a classic. If you've even if you've never played Clue, you know about Clue, whether you might know the movie. Apparently there's a television series. I didn't know that. I don't know if it's British.
I'd love to watch that.
Or what, but you better bet I will seek that out and try to watch it. It's a super simple premise. It's somebody has been murdered. Who murdered them? What room did they murder them in? And with what did they murder them? So Clue was actually a product of the 1940s.
Really? It's that old?
It's very, very old.
Wow.
It was originally invented by Anthony Pratt. He's an English musician, actually. He applied for a patent on this. The inventor of the murder mystery game, essentially. He applied for a patent for a game that he, at the time, called Murder, with an exclamation point at the end. The game was developed. It was pushed, the production of it, the main production of it, was pushed back to the late 1940s just due to post-war issues in Europe after World War II.
Sure.
So it didn't officially come out until 1949, almost two full years after the patent for the invention was given, and he actually simultaneously licensed the game to the Parker Brothers for a U.S. version. Now, the original version is called Cluedo in the U.K. I looked for a version of it to buy. I cannot find it anywhere.
I'm sure
cannot find the original Cluedo anywhere.
I'm sure if you did find it, it'd be worth a lot, I would imagine.
It's like at a random half-price bookstore.
Yeah.
In Britain, maybe. So there's a couple different, obviously, the U.S. version that we all probably know most has your main six characters, you know, Professor Plum, Mr. Green, Colonel Mustard, Mrs. White, Miss Scarlet, and Miss Peacock. So your six main characters. When Pratt designed it, he had 10 characters. He had a Mr. Brown, he had a Mr. Gold, a Miss Gray, and a Miss Silver. In the original UK version, Mrs. White was actually Nurse White, and Colonel Yellow was Colonel Mustard.
Colonel Yellow.
Later renamed, obviously, to Colonel Mustard. There were a couple more rooms. There was a gun room and a cellar in the original version. Those are not included in the US version. There were more weapons. There was a bomb, a syringe, a fireplace poker, axe, and poison, which I have seen poison in some of the US versions.
Sure.
And there was also a shillelagh, which is an Irish walking stick, pretty much, which would have made sense in the UK version, but I don't think would have translated. You could have used walking stick, I guess, for the US version. But yeah, I mean, I love the game Clue. It's fun. Danielle is insanely good at it. She guesses the murder almost instantly.
No, it is not instantly.
But it's fairly early on.
I think that I am pretty good at guessing, but I usually get down to the last thing, whether it's the room or the weapon, and it's between the two, and I don't have enough, like, guts to be like, okay, let me just guess. I want to know for sure. So then usually, like, someone else will still end up getting it, but then I'll end up, at the end, I'll be able to say, like, who has what cards.
See, but
and
I
was just
like,
down to the last two.
I think the UK version would pose a little bit more of a challenge to you. So the gameplay is a little bit different in the UK version as well. In the US version, you know, we put the three items in the card, the murderer, the weapon, and the room, and then we dole out the rest of the cards to the players. Mm-hmm. In the UK version, the rest of the cards get equally distributed into the rooms, and that's how you discover the cards, is when you go into the room, you can discover one of the cards. You also, rather than just randomly guessing somebody and moving them into the room, there were special, what they called counter tokens in the UK version, and you had to actually land on the character to be able to accuse them of the murder.
Oh, wow.
So I think that would pose a lot more. And also, you know, everybody had their different color characters, and in the UK version, somebody actually plays the person that got murdered.
Huh.
Their role was a little unclear to me when I researched the depths of Clue, but yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so somebody plays the murderer. I love the movie Clue. I know Steve likes the movie Clue, too. Me and Danielle, last Friday, actually went and saw the play for Clue.
Oh.
And that was really enjoyable.
Is it like the movie, or is it different?
It's pretty much the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where, you know,
they took a lot of the same line, like the famous lines from the movies from different characters.
Yeah, and when we walked into the playhouse in downtown Cleveland, they had, like, seven or eight tables set up with Clue board games on them.
Oh,
so you
cool.
could come early and play Clue with other people.
Did you play Clue with other people?
We didn't, no.
Uh-oh.
We got there
like a half
kinda
hour.
Early, but
they had
yeah.
a like an interactive touchscreen where you could answer questions and it would tell you what Clue character you are. I was Colonel Mustard, which is famously the character that Danielle likes to play with in the game.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Danielle was Professor Plum,
yeah,
which
I
was Steve's
Plum.
Go-to.
That's the one I play
yeah.
as always. I think it looked like him. And purple's my favorite color. Which character do you usually play, Stephanie?
I don't have a usual character.
You're usually Scarlet or White.
I feel like I'm white a lot.
I do like, yeah.
But white, yeah.
I usually let everyone pick, and then I don't have a preference.
Yeah, there were some really cool things. There's a famous scene, if you've seen the movie, where the maid shoots the chandelier and it falls and crashes. In the play, they do the same thing, but the scene is a slow motion scene, so the lights get real dim, and they play real slow, and the characters move real slowly as the chandelier
is
falling.
And the guy did, the actor did really well.
I think
it
was Mr. Green was pretty, Mr. Green ended up being quite a standout for me. Colonel Mustard was also cool.
Is it Mr.
But
Green the detective
really,
in the movie?
Mr. Green is
the
detective.
Really
spoiler
well.
Alert for the 30-year-old movie.
But like falling slowly as the the chandelier was falling slowly and he fell to the ground slowly. It was impressive.
It was really cool the way they set up the scenes too, because it was the main stage was the lobby, the lobby of
the
mansion.
Foyer.
And the different rooms were actually on like a swivel pushed into the sides of the wall. So if there was a scene in the living room, the whole room would slide out and you would watch the scene in the living room. Same with the kitchen, the whole side of the wall would slide out and you'd see the
That's
scene
really
in the
cool.
kitchen.
Yeah, so it was almost like a circle. It
That's
would
really
turn
neat.
So
yeah,
it was and then cool. it would turn and be another room.
It was really cool. But yeah, Clue's, oh man, I love Clue, I'll tell you what.
Talking about that play makes me, I've always been fascinated by the idea of possibly doing a life-size Clue. where you take on the girl, mm-hmm. the character, and you, like, actually go into a real house. I don't know how you'd send clues to one another. Maybe, like, via text or something. I don't know. But I think that could be really fun if we can find some adaptation to make it life-size. I think that'd be really neat.
Yeah, so Clue also had another name it was marketed as the Great Detective Game. Clue's my favorite game just because I like games where you're kind of independently playing by yourself. Mm. I do not like teams in games, but some of us do like teams in games. I know Steph has a super favorite game she loves that has teams in it.
So, I really like the game Sequence. It's not a very complicated game, and you don't need a lot of skill to
play it, I could say, like, Sequence, if you took Bingo and playing cards, threw them together in one game, that's Sequence.
That's cards, pretty good.
It's Cards the Board Game, is how I like to call it.
Okay, so Sequence says the object of the game is to form rows of 5 poker chips on the board by placing the chips on the board spaces corresponding to cards played from the player's hand. So there's a board game, or a game board, that has two decks of cards laid out, and like in a grid, and players have cards in their hand. So there's two decks. So there's two decks of cards, and that's like the draw pile. And so you have cards in your hand, and you have to lay the poker chips down, and you have to get a sequence is 5 in a row, and so you have to get 5 of your colored poker chips in a row, and I think you need 2 sequences, so 2 of those to win. And we played that a lot growing up. That was one of the games that we had a lot growing up. But I've always liked it. But I think what's really fun now, that because we didn't really read the directions, we were taught how to play it,
right?
But we didn't, like, I've never read the directions until
we just went off how we learned.
Yeah, until I think Steve and I got married, and we got it for
A wedding gift, actually. Yeah.
And looking through the directions, I realized that you could play with teams, because there's only 3 different colored poker chips. So we always thought it was just 3 players, but you can play with teams, which I think makes it really fun and really interesting. So when you play with teams, so say there's 6 people, 2 people on each team, and so you're all, so each team is using the same color poker chip, but you can't talk to each other or plan.
You can't see their cards.
Yeah, so you're both, so you and your other team,
you're trying to get a sequence.
Are trying to work together, to get a sequence, but you can't. To get a sequence, but you can't.
Because there's also, on the board, it's like double a deck of cards. So that kind of makes it interesting, too, because you can't just put one, and, you know, somebody can start in the other hearts, but then your teammate can put them on in the other hearts.
But, and the team situation, you can go up to 12 people in this game.
Whoa.
And that's,
which is a big deal.
One of the issues that we have sometimes when we have game nights is we have so many people, and there's only so many games that you could play.
And I've entertained the idea of having 2 different rooms with 2 different games going, but no one seems to support that idea.
It's hard to say, like, okay, you guys go in here.
It's like when you go out to dinner with a big family, and this happened to us last week. There were like 10 of us, and we had to get seated at different tables, like multiple tables away. Like, that's half the battle of going out to dinner together, is to sit together. So I kind of feel the same way with like the multiple board game things, but I digress.
So it's nice to have a game, which we have never played 12 people playing Sequence, because
we can't get 12 people to agree to play Sequence.
But Stephanie's birthday is coming up, and that is something we're doing for her birthday.
That sounds like a joke, but that's true. That's what I want for my birthday.
Party.
Is whenever we have, because we always have a big birthday dinner.
Let's find 12 people.
No, well, we're going to we always have a big birthday dinner.
So how many?
There's 5 kids and 4 spouses to those kids.
So it's 9.
And then the parents.
And then other in-laws. And
10, 11.
So we need to, let's just fight some random person to make number 12.
Yeah.
Like, we'll invite one of our friends or some guy we meet.
Neighbor.
Perhaps. Yeah, neighbor, yeah. And it could be
then 12 we'll people. Have
12. Going back to the complexity ratings, to kind of put it into perspective, Clue has a complexity rating of 1.66.
It's not very simple. It's like I said, who did it, where did they do it, what did they do it with.
Sequence has a complexity rating of 1.34.
I feel like it should be lower than that.
And my game had, the Haunted House game had a complexity rating of 2.38. And Danielle, you wanted to talk about Catan.
Yes.
That has a complexity rating of 2.30.
It does. In the name, Catan, it was formerly known as Settlers of Catan.
Okay, okay.
But they actually just took off Settlers, and they just call it Catan now, which I think most people called it Catan anyways.
I've heard some people say Catan.
I just say Catan.
Yeah, why did they take the Settlers off, I wonder? I think people don't know what Settlers are.
No, I think because so many people just said they Catan. Called it Catan.
And on the box, some Catan's call... in huge font.
Right.
So. And then on the top easier it says to market Settlers. Too.
Catan.
But in the name Settlers of Catan, that's basically what you're doing. You're settling Catan, and so as... yourself in this game, you're basically just building settlements and cities and trying to get the biggest settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And so Catan was actually created in 1995.
No way. I thought so, it was newer than that. Wow.
1995.
I think older.
It's just 1 year younger than I am. According to Board Game Geek, it says 1995. I mean, they might have had something before.
Mm.
But according to Board Game Geek, it says 1995. The designer was Klaus Tuber.
I think that's how you say it. Yeah.
I think that's how I say it. But I think it's really interesting. For me, why I wanted to talk about it was when I was like a teenager, I knew of the game, but I had just never played it. So when I thought of like board games and like those strategy type games, like Catan was the one that I always knew. I always knew what Settlers of Catan was, like in pop culture and things like that. I heard of it. It was actually in, there was an old, like, sketch comedy group that I used to watch, bringing it back to Ben Schwartz.
College Humor.
Jake and Amir, they had a video about it, but on that same College Humor site, they used to have a show called Bleep Bloop, and then they changed the name to Nerd Alert, but they posted a video of them playing Catan. So I watched the video, and I watched them play Catan. It was really cool. It was on a Microsoft table. It was called like a Microsoft Surface,
mm-hmm.
but the table was the board game. So it was like a screen kind of was cool. The table, but it was like an actual table. Like you couldn't, it was like really hard to break and things like that. And it was cool because you had the screen, but you also had physical things. So you had real dice that you would roll. The table would know what the dice,
really?
When you rolled them. That's and then neat. It would automatically like put the cards in your deck.
Huh.
So in Catan, when you roll the dice, that depending on where your settlements are, like that's where you get
The cards.
That
sure.
depends on like what cards you get. So yeah, I thought so. I saw that, I knew of Catan.
Funny.
That was the original strategy game that I kind of knew of growing up, and then we got the game and then we played it and it lived up to its expectations.
Wasn't it
for
your aunt got the? Isn't that not the first time we played it?
She won some competition.
Their aunt got the game and that was the first time we played it. And then Steph and Steve ended up eventually getting it. And the expansion packs and stuff. A funny story about Catan, there's a local restaurant in the area called Melt, and it's like it's a grilled cheese restaurant. And the one location, when you would go in, instead of giving them your name for the wait list, they would have an orange trick-or-treat pumpkin with a bunch of like hello my name is name tags in there that you could fill out and put in there, fill out funny names, pop culture names, stuff like that. So our wait list name that night was Settlers of Catan. I had never heard of Settlers of Catan before, and we were sitting there waiting, and some guy came up and mentioned Settlers of Catan. I was like, oh, I don't know what that is. And Daniel's like, you don't know what Settlers of Catan is.
And at that point, I had never even played it yet, but I knew of the game.
And then subsequently, like, I remember seeing it in Parks and Recreation, the one character, Ben, played by Adam Scott, they play Settlers of Catan at one point in one of the episodes.
I think it was his stag party or his
bachelor party. Yeah, and he ends up creating a game called The Cones of Dunshire, which kind of follows the same sort of intricate gameplay, if you will, of Catan that Catan can be sometimes, but
That's why I like it. It was like the original strategy game that, and the oldest one that I had ever heard of. So once we started playing games, I think that's a good place to start.
We went shortly from Tick to Ride. It was shortly after that we got into Catan. I think that was the next, like, I don't know, advanced game, if you want to call it that.
Yeah,
that we started
yeah.
playing
complexity rating game.
Yeah, complexity.
One of those entry level,
which is still 2.3. It's not even half. It's not even half.
That's really funny. I when I started getting into board games more on Reddit, I joined some board game group, and I looked up Catan, and all these people were like, "Catan's like this basic game. Like,
right.
Who plays that game anymore?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm in
for
it now."
And I think now, especially as board games are becoming more and more popular. All of these people are making these games, and I mean, some of them can get really intricate in the rules and in the gameplay. So
you got nerdsplained too on Reddit.
Yeah, I did. And also, shortly, like, around the same time that we got more into these games, I met this guy who, for fun, he creates games. It's like a hobby of his. And he also said the same thing about Catan. He's, like, kind of talking smack about
it. Is that the one
it.
Who told us that Dominion was an entry-level one?
Yeah, he said the same thing about Dominion. Anyway, he makes games that last days.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I don't think Catan has that. I mean, I think if you play, like, Monopoly and things like that, you can play Catan and kind understand and catch on.
And for Christmas and my birthday, Shannon got me an expansion, Seafarer's expansion to Catan, mm-hmm. and she got me another expansion for Christmas, and I'm really excited to try those, but we haven't had a chance to yet.
Right, yeah, because Catan is 3 to 4 players.
Yeah. All right. Well, I do have you can get the thing that lets 6 people play.
Right,
so
yes.
We've done that before.
Also, like, mm-hmm. Catan in space, like, space.
Yeah, I've seen that. There's a store in Parma, Ohio called The Gaming Goat, and I went there and was talking about Catan, and the guy there told me that Space Catan was his favorite. He thinks it's better than normal Catan, so I kind of want to try it. We'll
yeah.
see.
You should try it.
Really quick. Yeah. Talking about game variations.
Oh, yeah. This is hilarious. We found this out today.
So, there are a ton of different variations of sequence.
Yes.
Really?
These are just the ones that I found. Sequence for kids. Sequence numbers.
What?
Sequence letters.
Hmm.
Sequence states and capitals.
Wait for it, Zach. There's one.
Sequence dogs.
There it is.
Sequence cats. Sequence Jewish edition.
I think we should try that one.
Bible sequence. Sequence dice. Travel sequence. And they also have sequence deluxe edition, which has a cushioned playing mat. and comes in a special tin case. And they also have jumbo cushioned sequence. I couldn't find exact... It didn't say how large the mat was, but it's a larger mat with, like, bigger pieces.
So it's like bingo cards and Twister.
Probably. one game.
I want to try some of those. I think the Jewish edition or the Bible one.
Or the Bible one.
Yeah. Or even like the dog one, you know? That could be a fun family game.
Sure.
Speaking of family games, one of our favorites is Mad Libs, and we're going to do one right now.
Now, we don't like to get political on the podcast, but today we're going to get a little political with our Mad Lib.
A little bit. The Mad Lib book we're going from is Mad Libs for President. And I'll go ahead and be the reader here. Zach, give me a plural noun.
Podcasts.
Ooh, podcasts. Stephanie, a noun.
Glass.
Danielle, adjective.
Tangy.
Tangy. Zach, plural noun.
Ooh, that's a good one. Blankets.
That's what you pick?
Yeah, blankets.
Okay.
Adjective, Stephanie.
Shiny.
Danielle, noun.
A narwhal.
Narwhal. I love it. Zach, adjective.
Sticky.
Famous person, Stephanie.
Ellen
DeGeneres. Plural noun.
Captain America shields.
Pretty long.
I know. I just wanted to make you write that in there.
It says the next one is same plural noun, and the one after that is same plural noun. So I have to write it 3 times. All right, Zach, noun.
School bus.
All right, here we go. This is the Gettysburg Address. 70 years ago, our podcast brought forth on this glass a tangy nation. Conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all blankets are created shiny. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that narwhal or any narwhal so conceived and so dedicated to the sticky task remaining before us so that this nation, under Ellen DeGeneres, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the Captain America shields, by the Captain America shields, and for the Captain America shields, shall not perish from the school bus.
Interesting. Interesting. That was a pretty...
I think that fit.
Was pretty nice.
Just pictured Ellen running for president holding Captain America shields.
That'd be sweet. So, I hope you enjoyed that Mad Lib. It's one of our favorites. Sometimes they're not that funny. Sometimes they're hilarious.
Mm-hmm. I think the funniest thing we ever had with a Mad Lib was a squatting rocket.
Yeah, squatting rocket. Yeah. I remember that. Sometimes they get borderline inappropriate.
Yes.
I look back. The
and
Mad Libs.
Whose fault is that?
mine usually.
I always think of there's an episode of The Office where Angela, I think Angela and Dwight are doing a Mad Lib, and he reads back and she's like, the nice man went to the nice house with the white, I always think of that. I think that's funny.
And then she's like laughing. She's like, yeah.
There's my brothers and I and my buddies used to stay up late doing Mad Libs, and I was a teenager at the time, and you know how teenagers are. Anyways, I still have that Mad Lib book, and I was reading through it recently. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, this is crazy.
Maybe we'll have to read one.
Nope, that's a terrible idea. All right, we all were on this journey of board games. We talked about some that we played and that we like. We talked about board games, why we like them so much, and there's a few out there I want to try. Every time we go to Walmart or Target or any store, really, the Game & Go. I like going to specifically game stores, but even when we don't go to those, we go to other stores. I always look in the gaming aisle. So, I'm going
to
talk about...
Like, we own more games than we've had the chance to try.
It's true.
We have a birthday party or a Christmas. Somebody gets a game. Multiple people get games. And I feel like we never come back to all of them. So, I don't know.
Because we do
have
kind of
a
lot
to try.
We do kind of have our favorites that we are all together.
Yeah.
We need to pick, like, one full year and not buy any new games that year.
Won't happen.
And work through playing the ones we haven't played yet.
Well, I feel like it's hard, too, because a lot of times it is just one night or two nights that we have, and so we are doing a lot of catching up, and then some games are really long.
The,
so we'll play
family.
One long game, but then it gets, like, super late, and then we only have time for a little bit.
But doing that, Zach, would be like me telling you, all right, you can't watch any movies in 2020 because you have to watch all the movies from 2019.
Yeah, which I wouldn't do.
But we have lots, like Zach said, we have tons we haven't played yet. I have I have a Game of Thrones Catan, and it looks pretty cool, but I've had it for months and still haven't tried it yet. A game I want to try is called The Banishing. It's a card game. It's created by Sean Rumble. That's a fun name. And the artists John Camacho and Michael Philippi. It was released in 2017 and is published by WizKids. It plays 3 to 5 people and it goes for about 45 minutes, age 14 and up, but I ignore that rule usually. It's a 2.20 out of 5 for complexity. It's a strategy co-op card game. Stephanie really likes co-op games where everyone works together, kind of like the Trail House on the Hill. And this one, you're working together. I'll just read you the premise. I think it's pretty neat. A dark void has opened and undead creatures are attempting to enter our world. You have come together as guardians who must work together to force the undead back through the void. However, the longer it takes, the stronger the undead become, threatening to overwhelm all. So in the game, there's a grid of cards, and you pick them up as a team, and when you pick them up, sometimes these undead or zombies attack you. So as a group, you're trying to, you know, heal yourself, hurt the zombies, and you're also trying to banish them. That's why it's called The Banishing. And basically, after you banish 10 of them, you win the game. But it's kind of hard, because as the game progresses, they become stronger and stronger. So you kind of want to try and finish it quickly, but it doesn't always work out. In the game, you can play as a fighter, a healer, a bard, a sorcerer, a thief, a brute, or a cultist. And those are the different powers. And each have different powers you can do. And that together, you work to defeat these undead.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it, mostly because it's a co-op game and it's a drafting game, like where there's different cards and everyone, you're trying to pull cards and make the coolest combinations to beat the game efficiently and quickly. And I like that sort of thing. So a friend of mine, the one I was talking about earlier, who makes the days-long games, he recommended it to me. And he said it's not too complicated, it's one you can do with your friends in the night, and it looked pretty neat. So The Banishing, everyone, you ought to check it out.
So it's like a co-op game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of co-op games, too. We actually tried a brand new game last night that our other in-law, Stephanie and Danielle's sister, Darlene,
and future
husband, Jared, future in-law, Jared got for their birthday. It's called 5-Minute Dungeon, and essentially, it's essentially like an old-school, like, Nintendo game, almost, where you're battling through different bosses. There's 5 bosses total. They get progressively harder. To defeat a boss, each player is tasked with, you know, they have resource cards in their hand. And also various action cards that can do different things throughout the game. So you're tasked with defeating each one of the bosses. And to defeat the bosses, you have to apply certain resources. So the resources are like, one's called Running Man, One's an arrow, one is a shield, one is a sword, one is a scroll. So you flip over the boss might have two swords and a shield. So as a group, you all have to lay down two swords and a shield between however many of you are playing. So if I have a shield and Steve has two swords, boom, we defeated that mini-boss is what it's called. And eventually you'll get to the end of the boss, and you'll have the final boss battle. And those are usually a lot more resources, so you might need, like, five swords, four shields, and a scroll. So as a group, you know, you have to defeat the boss by laying down those resource cards. So it's essentially that. There is a Marvel version of the game that me and Danielle actually just bought today, and hopefully we'll try it out tonight. It's very similar to the original 5-minute dungeon. You defeat the bosses with the resource cards.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple wrinkles thrown in. You can be taken out of the game, essentially. There are certain cards that disable your character, and then you cannot participate in providing resources to the rest of the group to defeat that boss. And there's certain cards that bring you back from the paralysis or whatever. So it's a little bit of a different take on the game. Some other wrinkles thrown in, but I think it's, you know, it sounds really fun. It's a very fast-paced game. You have a mobile app as a timer, so should have started with this at the beginning. The 5-minute part of the game title is you have to defeat the main boss in 5 minutes. If you don't defeat the boss in 5 minutes, your team loses. If you run out of cards, you're taken out of the game. If all the players run out of cards, your team loses. So that's essentially, you pair it up with the mobile app. The mobile app will count down the timer, and you go through and you defeat all the bosses so you get to the final boss battle. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very fast paced. You really gotta stay on your toes. This is definitely a no phone game, as we talked about earlier.
Yes, because it's very quick.
And a no snack game, as I learned last night. I was trying to eat chips and dip, and it just doesn't work with this fast paced game. You can't eat chips and dip while laying down the cards. So.
I think we all had a lot of fun playing this game. I think for Steve and I, it's like, I like this game a lot because I love co-op games and I love teams, and it was really fun to work as a team. And for Steve, it's a game where it's impossible to have your phone out or to do anything.
Yes.
Like for those 5 minutes, you're completely in the game.
And
you
like, I got to be a wizard. I love that kind of stuff. So, and like someone was a barbarian. In some ways, maybe it's a little bit of a like spoof on Dungeons and Dragons. A little bit.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of a game on Xbox called Castle Crashers. Huh. We're all running through defeating these little bosses.
I'm excited to try the Marvel version. I've noticed Marvel, there's a Marvel edition to a lot of games.
Oh, they license everything, man.
So it'll be interesting to try this one out.
And Danielle was actually telling me about another game that she had seen recently that she was really interested in playing. What was that game?
The game is called Welcome to... .. I actually saw it when we were at the Gaming Goat.
Oh.
And I was kind of looking at it. So I think next time we go, I might have to pick it up. But it's basically a card game. Like, you have cards, but then on your own, you have, it looks like some type of board for yourself, like a piece of paper. And as the cards get flipped, you're kind of doing your own thing on your piece of paper. And so it says that it plays like a roll and write dice game in which you mark results on a score sheet, but without dice. So you're flipping cards from three different piles, and you're basically, like, building your house. You're building your perfect home. That's kind of the premise of the game. But the weight or the complexity rating is only 1.83. So it's a quick game. It says it's like a half hour game. But something that kind of intrigued me the most is that it says you can play with 1 to 100 players.
Wow. So, that's perfect.
And it's kind of because the cards are getting flipped, but you're doing your own thing on your own score pad. Like, building your home and building your perfect home. And I think that's perfect for us because a lot of times we do have so many people and it's something that everyone can play. And
if you're really lonely or bored one night, you can play it by yourself.
You can play it by yourself.
This
yeah.
is my perfect house.
We could play that game at a wedding.
We could,
that's
yeah.
pretty remarkable.
So yeah, that was one thing that I think.
What's it called again?
It's called Welcome To.
Okay.
On the front of the board game, it says Welcome To Your Perfect Home. So it would just be a quick game. And I think a lot of times it ends up being really late, and we're like, oh, let's just play one more game or something really quick, and that I think this could be good.
That'd be good, because sometimes we say that, and it ends up being not real quick.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yep.
Stephanie, what game were you interested in?
So there's two of them. One is called Paperback. It was created in 2014, and then there's a sequel called Hardback, and it was created in 2018. They're both pretty similar. there's actually a review for one of for Hardback, and this someone had said it's Boggle meets Dominion.
Oh wow!
So it's a deck building game, but it's also you're spelling words. And someone else had said that they like this better than Scrabble.
Thing. That's like my favorite kind of game and your favorite kind of game.
Yeah. So you're in both of them. You're an author trying to finish a novel.
Oh.
And that sounds really cool. You have to. You build words and you get fame points. Whoever has the most fame at the end wins.
That sounds really neat.
Yeah,
that sounds really fun.
We should get that one.
All right, we're gonna go out and we're all gonna buy these games.
Yes, and we'll report
add
on
to
them.
Our collection.
Seriously,
I've already bought mine, so I've checked that box. Boom.
You can also do co-op with these games.
Oh, nice!
I'm even more intrigued. Yeah.
You can do a single thing, but there's also I don't understand how it works, but it's an option.
That's really neat. We like co-op games, as we've discussed. A couple other ones, you know, we like playing Pandemic. There's a Harry Potter one.
There's a real world pandemic going on right now.
In real life?
Yeah, there is.
With that sickness. So every time I hear it on the news, I'm like, that reminds me of Pandemic. Not to put the sickness in light terms, but I always get I always think of Pandemic. So.
Too bad we can't cure it as easily.
Yeah. That's Shannon's favorite game, Pandemic.
Yeah, it is Shannon's favorite. Or Ticket to Ride. So those are some of our favorite games, some of the games we want to try, some of the games we just like talking about. Let me tell you, that's just scratching the surface of the games we have. We have tons more.
We might have to do a games part two the line episode.
I think we should. And we're also always looking for new games, so if you have any suggestions, we'd love to hear them. I think that about wraps it up for what we want to talk about today. What do you say, gang?
Yeah, I learned a lot about board games.
I did too.
Various board games that you guys like.
I learned a lot about you as well, all of you, and why you like the games you
like.
Yeah,
I think your favorite board game really speaks to your personality.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe.
You like building houses?
Yeah.
I like murder.
Yep.
I like scary things.
I like books and
words. I like cards and poker.
I like books.
So those are some of our favorite games. We love to, learn about more. And
if you've made it this far, thanks for listening.
Yes,
thank you. I'll tell you what, all this board game talk has really got me hungry, though.
Me too. It's about dinner time.
Which I think brings us to our topic for our next podcast, which would be we're going to talk about foods that we had growing up, like snacks or food or something that's a little bit different. I think everyone has some odd type of food that they had growing up that isn't odd to them because they grew up with it, but you mentioned it to someone else and they're like, what? That's a thing? So we're going to mention some foods or snacks that we had growing up, and then also things that we've kind of tried.
Because of each other.
Yeah.
In the spirit of the name of our podcast, Inlaudable.
Yeah.
For sure. How our families have blended in a culinary way.
So don't listen to the next episode on an empty stomach as the Inlaudables discuss food.
Catch you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
Inlaudable is brought to you by Skinny Sweaters from the makers of Skinny Jeans. If it's too tight, it's just right.